Fighting men who gained fame and won honors in the arena of combat achieved high standing in the community. Furthermore, if their leadership under fire led to military successes because of steadiness and wise decision-making, they were sought after for civilian leadership, where that hard-won experience could be put to use for the benefit of all the people. In a way, then, warfare was a necessary part of the overall culture, but not in a sense that it was created or used to fulfill a need for violence or aggression. Whether by design or not, a negative aspect of human interaction was used as the vehicle for positive influence. In the very early 1800s, sometime after various Plains tribes acquired firearms to some extent, a group of enemy raiders, perhaps Pawnee, made an incursion to Cicharu Lakota territory from the south. The southern boundary then was the Running Water River, now known as the Niobrara River, in what is now north-central Nebraska. They managed to advance north nearly to the Smoking Earth or Little White River before they were detected and pursued. Badly outnumbered, the only recourse for the raiders was to run back south. A relentless pursuit by the Cicharu Lakota warriors wore out the enemy horses and forced their riders to make a stand on high ground, a pine-covered knoll on a ridge east of the Smoking Earth River. A few of the raiders had been wounded in the pursuit, and they apparently died of their wounds after a defensive position was established. A siege ensued wherein the Lakota attempted several charges to dislodge the raiders. A Cicharu was wounded and a horse killed in the futile attempts. During the night, the raiders attempted to break out, but they were turned back and suffered more casualties. The following day saw a series of Cicharu assaults and enemy counterattacks. The Cicharu then decided to wait it out because they had access to water and plenty of food, not to mention reinforcements. In spite of the dire circumstances, the raiders showed no signs of weakness. They defended themselves bravely and skillfully. Both sides knew that it was only a matter of time before the raiders were out of water and food and ammunition for their two firearms. The Cicharu talked of setting brush fires and forcing the enemy from the hill, but it was decided to let the raiders live because they were brave men. The leader of the Cicharu contingent signaled for a parley and then met with the leader of the raiders. Through hand signs, a necessary and effective method of communication used by many Plain tribes who couldn't speak each other's language, the offer of clemency was made, likewise the reply. The raiders surrendered their horses and returned for safe passage to the south bank of the Running Water River. Their dead, buried in shallow graves atop the pine-covered ridge, were to be left unmolested. My grandfather told me this story. He also said that war is really a fight between the good and the bad sides of humans. And while both emerge during hostilities, it is within each person to choose to bring out the best or the worst part of himself. In this story, the Cicharu, I'm proud to say, brought out the best part of themselves. Interestingly, in the mid-1980s, highway engineers digging core samples prior to new highway construction discovered human bones on a ridgetop a few miles east of the Little White River and 11 miles west of the town of Mission, South Dakota, on the Rosebud Sioux Indian Reservation. After conferring with Rosebud Sioux or Cicharu Lakota tribal leaders and elders, the survey line for the new highway bed was moved and the bones remain undisturbed. There is no conclusive evidence that identifies those bones, but in my mind at least, they are a testament to honor, to man's humanity, to man. I shudder to think of a society where there is absence of honor. The consequences of such a condition would be confusion, chaos, and anarchy. The fine line we walk was drawn because honor cannot be mandated. Therefore, we are dependent on the ability of individuals, societies, cultures, and nations to choose between the best or the worst part of themselves individual choices can be simple or more complicated. In 1996, in a rural community where we lived, my wife stopped at a convenience store to purchase gasoline. She had only $5 and managed to go 5 cents over her limit before she shut off the gas pump. The attendant in the store summarily confiscated her car keys after my wife reported her unintended faux pas. She telephoned to advise me of her predicament and had to wait while I drove to the store to pay the nickel overage. Several months later, we moved to a small community in the Northwest. I purchased a part for my pickup truck at an auto parts store and was a dollar short. The owner, who didn't know my name or my address or phone number, made up the difference and said I could settle up with him the next time I was in town. A developer hired an architect, his daughter's fiancé, to design a house for a special client. The house needed to be the architect's best effort, the developer said, a statement of design, function, and beauty. Within a few months, the young architect delivered a set of plans to his prospective father-in-law. The man approved the plans and then asked the architect to supervise the construction of the house, giving him complete control and a generous budget. The young man took the job eagerly. The plans he had drawn were the best he had ever produced, and he was anxious to see the house become a reality. He took bids from several construction firms and hired the lowest bidder with the least amount of experience, ignoring the fact that the next lowest bidder had a reputation for completing projects on time and under budget. Next, he went to a local lumberyard and purchased the cheapest building materials, saving money, but seriously sacrificing quality. The builder's inexperience resulted in serious structural flaws. Rather than correct them and incur more costs, the architect decided that no one would know the difference once the floors, walls, and ceilings were in place, and he would save money. Outwardly, the house was a showpiece. Though its appearance was aesthetically pleasing, the architect was well aware of its hidden weaknesses. But he was just as convinced that the occupants of the house would never know the difference. The developer arrived with his daughter and accepted the keys to the new house and praised the young architect for a job well done. Then he turned the keys over to the young couple. It was his wedding present to them. Honor is probably the most difficult virtue to uphold because it requires that one first be honest with oneself. If you can overlook or live with your own dishonor, then it's a simple matter to think that the rest of the world can also. In the old days, a certain warrior society called the Ogle Lute Wichapi, or the Red Shirt Warriors, issued only 2 invitations for new members once every 4 years. It was a prestigious club, and many wanted to join. But not everyone who was invited was able to pass the test required for membership. It's interesting that those who failed ultimately turned out to be among the most honorable men around. To earn membership in the Red Shirt Warrior Society, each invitee was asked to face the test of endurance. Without food and water and only a knife for protection, he was required to run a particular route to a well-known landmark, a high shale cliff along a river, climb it, and then recover a red sash tied to a stone. This was to be done immediately after the new moon in the middle moon, or July, the hottest time of the year. The only other condition was a time limit of 4 days. The 2 invitees would draw lots to determine who would go first. The prospective member would usually return by sunset of the 4th day, exhausted, hungry, and most of all thirsty. Before he could take food or water, he was escorted into the lodge of the Red Shirt Warrior Society and asked to present the sash he recovered. In all its history, no prospective member had ever failed to return with a red sash. The sash was rolled tightly, and the man who brought it back was asked to hold it above his head and let it unfurl. If it extended all the way to the ground, the man had gained the membership. If it did not reach to the ground, he was denied. The test was one of physical endurance, but it was also a test of honor. There were two sashes. One was tied to a stone at the top of the shale cliff, and when it was unfurled from above a man's head, it easily reached the ground. The other sash was tied to a tree located at a point just over halfway along the route, at a place where it was logical to rest briefly in the shade. That sash was the shorter of the two. If a man unfurled this sash before the elders of the Red Shirt Warrior Society, it was clearly evident that he had not gone the full distance. Those who returned with the short sash were turned away, and the elders of the society never needed to explain their decision. No one ever received a second invitation to join, but in all its history, the few men who were denied membership into the Red Shirt Warrior Society never failed to demonstrate honor in all their undertakings. In Lakota culture, red is the color of honor.